Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. It's a special bonus edition Arscast. We've already done an Arscast extra for you today, so hopefully you've got your ears around that one. If you haven't, you can go back and listen myself and James discuss the 1-0 win over Bournemouth and all that that entailed. But this particular episode, it revolves around two Arsenal legends. You might have seen on his social media, his Instagram in particular, Ian Wright turning up at Dennis Bergkamp's door, knocking on the door, being welcomed inside, and they sat down and did a big long interview, which is being released on Wednesday on Ian's YouTube channel. So I'll give you more details about that a bit later on, but Ian has very kindly given me some of his time to chat about Dennis Bergkamp, about the interview, and also about some of the young players that are coming through at Arsenal this season. Eddie Nketiah in particular is somebody that Ian has taken under his wing. He's on loan at Leeds United. And we talk a bit about the advice that he's giving him, his potential as a player, along with some of the other young players who are really exciting us this season so far at Arsenal. So enjoy this. This is me and Ian Wright.
Andrew, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, thank you. And as always, thank you very much for your time. I just want to start by asking, when was the last time you saw Dennis in person?
Well, we FaceTimed kind of a little bit in and out, you know, FaceTime a bit. So I haven't seen Dennis for, I don't know, when did he come to do the statue?
Oh, my God.
That's the last time I saw him.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the last time I saw him.
That's a good few years ago, so...
That's a few years, yeah. So it's just great to see him and Enrita and everybody. I didn't get to see the oldest two, Mitch and Stella and that, but, like, I saw one of the younger daughters. It's just great to see them and Enrita, his wife, you know, because we spent a lot of time together when we were playing because we used to share rooms.
Yeah.
So we got kind of close.
And how was it like when you see, you know, when you talk to somebody via whatever electronic communication you want to talk to them about, whether it's WhatsApp or yeah. FaceTime or whatever, you know, it's fine. But then when you see somebody for the first time in a long time, it can maybe be a little bit strange or awkward. How was it seeing him again?
I felt not emotional. I didn't want to cry, Andrew, but I just felt like, you know, somebody that you just love. It's like, I was so happy to see him. Because the thing with Dennis is that because when we're in each other's company and when we used to be, he always, as much as he's very dry sense of humor, always messing around prankster, he always has a little smile. He's always laughing. Like, I've done a little thing with him where, you know, I said, I love you, man. And he says, I love you too. And I said, well, why can't you say it first? Why can't you say it first sometimes? He says, it's in the interview. I don't wanna give any spoilers, but it's just a little snippy clip that they've done. But that's what he's like. But it's just to see him. And then, you know, we went down into his kind of like trophy cabinet room, Andrew. Just Arsenal. Of course, he's got some Ajax stuff and that, but he's got a room that's just pure Arsenal. It's just, you know, I love him, Andrew.
A treasure trove.
A treasure trove of just memories and stuff, you know what I mean? It was just like, you know, and then, you know, we was talking about stuff, obviously, off the camera, and then, you know, once we was talking on the camera, but I just, like I say, his two youngest are still doing their schooling, but I just get the impression that he's going to be back here at some stage. I just get that impression.
When you say back here, you mean Arsenal?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, you know, when we talked about it, he mentioned in the interview about he doesn't want to manage. He doesn't want to be a head coach. He wants to be involved in that age group and that level of footballer where he knows he can really make a difference in respect of expression and playing and attitude.
Mm.
And, you know, all the great stuff that he was all about, you know, getting the best out of yourself, working hard, you know, living right. He says that's where he gets the most joy. Out of the coaching.
Yeah, and look, the example that he set to other players at Arsenal, you know, is fairly legendary, isn't it, in terms of how he trained, how he played, how he lived his life and everything else. And even there was Robin van Persie, I remember talking one time about how he had come in from training and he watched Dennis Bergkamp out there doing some practice drills, some shooting, whatever it was, and it kind of dawned on him, well, if I ever want to be anywhere near as good as Dennis Bergkamp, I have to kind of behave like Dennis Bergkamp.
Yeah, I have to do it. And that's funny because I was with Robin the other day. We was doing a show for the Premier League, and you know, I mean, he was talking about Dennis and the impact that Dennis had on him. And he kind of said the same thing, Andrew. Is that he said that if, like you said, if Dennis Bergkamp's out there doing that, why am I in here? I should be out there. And that's the kind of impression he had on all of us. Because like I've said on many occasions, Andrew, when Dennis came, we were shocked simply that Inter Milan would let a player of that caliber go. And yeah, 7 million at the time was a lot of money, but we could not believe that they let him go because he's in training, in the way he was, and the way he integrated with us. He talks about the core and how he believes that in England you have to have a British core in your team. He believes that there should be some around because he integrated so quickly with us and got it so quickly that he realized how important it was to have that core. And, you know, it for us as a team and as the players that we were, and remember we were in 90, when I got there in 91, Andrew, we'd already won the league twice in the 3 years. And we kind of went through that winning cups kind of phase.
Yeah.
FA Cups and Cup Winners' Cups. So when Dennis came, you know, we were a team that were, we were good enough, but we weren't there mentally. You know, we weren't there mentally, and we knew that we had the players that have done the hard yards, what it takes to win a league. But everybody was almost stagnant, went stagnant. Too much jollies, too many people just like jollying up. We turned into a cup team. And Dennis actually said in the interview that when he first got there, he realised that we weren't capable of being champions yet. But then once Platy came, and then we went through that second season. I remember we played at Leeds, and Dennis mentions in the interview. I remember saying to him when we were getting ready in the tunnel, Andrew, I looked around at our team and I said, "We can win, man. We can be champions, man." I remember when Dennis said it. He said that. I remember you said that to me. I think we drew 1-1 with Leeds. But I looked at our team and I said to him, "We can be champions." And with him in there, and Platy, and then the rest of the guys were all much more infused about taking on United, taking on being at the top end and doing what we needed to do.
Yeah.
He brought that belief.
As a player at a club who, you know, at that time, you say we're a cup team and weren't really challenging for the title, what does it mean, how does it change your perception of the club itself? Like, no matter how much you love Arsenal, if you're at an Arsenal that's never going to challenge for a league title, you might think about it in a different way. But does it suggest to you, you know, when someone like Dennis Bergkamp comes in with that profile, the way it kind of blew Arsenal's transfer business wide open? We hadn't really done any transfer like that previously, or certainly in my lifetime, does that tell you that there's a seriousness from the hierarchy, from the top of the club, that they mean business?
Well, I, like I said, Andrew, we were almost sleepwalking. We were getting by, winning cups, getting into Cup Winners' Cup, and it was fine because it was great days and great. You know, we won stuff, but it did. When Dennis was signed, one thing's for sure: Dennis Bergkamp and David Platt would never have signed for Arsenal if George Graham was still there. So however, whatever anyone says about how he left and whatever happens, George Graham would not have signed those two players just because that's because he was George Graham, and he just wouldn't have.
Yeah.
He would not have signed a player like that because in his mind, he thinks it's a luxury player. he'll probably think that David Platt is somebody that just wants to come back and just like swan around, which both of them proved the total opposite. Dennis came with a point to prove because people was writing off of Inter Milan, and Platy had a successful spell in Italy and wanted to come back. And so, you know, when you put those two into the mix that what we already had, like I say, it makes you look around and you think our team's really good. Now, if we can all get together in respect of what we're doing, nutrition, all the drinking stopped, all this, that we turn into a serious fucking football team.
Mm.
You know, and yeah. So then you look at it and you think to yourself, as bad as it was when George went, we were all gutted. Well, you know, I mean, you almost feel to yourself, that doesn't happen if George Graham's still in charge of Arsenal. We probably would have just faded out. You know what I mean? At some stage, he probably would have moved on. Players would have started leaving. Because when I went to Arsenal to win the league.
Yeah.
I genuinely, because like I said, when I got there, they were champions twice out of the last three. And then we went through this spell of just winning cups. And that's why in the end, Andrew, for me to end up winning the Premier League, that's why I think when people see, when I raised up the Premier League trophy and then I done my bit, then I turned around to the North Bank with it. And then I got to give it back to get my medal. And when I jumped off, I just spin and jumping thing because it was, I didn't even realize, Andrew, but that was the year after that season, I was going to be moved on to West Ham.
Yeah.
So it was literally, it was my last chance. That was my last chance. You know, it was my last chance. And if I never won the league at being at Arsenal with the goals I scored, I probably wouldn't be the kind of same infused, like effervescent guy because I'd feel like I'd almost let not only the club down, let myself down.
Yeah.
Because we were good enough and I scored enough goals, but I knew that we were serious about what we were doing because of David Dean, obviously, because they were David Dean signings, and because we spent so much money.
Yeah, I mean
that didn't happen. It didn't. I was the record signing. I think what 2.5 million.
Yeah,
we spent £7 million on Dennis Bergkamp, and if George Graham was there, I remember David Dean telling me the story about George Graham not wanting to pay more than 2.25 for me, 2,250,000. That's it. That's the ceiling.
Yeah.
And I heard that David Dean had to get that through himself. He was the one who got it through, and made the deal get done because George Graham said, "No, we're not doing it. Then we won't do it." So for the sake of 250,000, I could have not been at Arsenal.
Think of all the goals we would have missed out on over a paltry sum. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's such a paltry sum. But the point I'd make with it is how petty George Graham was in respects of, you know, success and what he wanted. Because remember, George Graham's success was done on shoestring and youngsters.
Mm.
It wasn't done on spending a lot of money. Dave Seaman was the record signing before me, 1.3 or something, whatever it was. So it wasn't about spending for him. It was about bringing people through and nurturing them through and then them coming to the fore and doing what they'd done. It wasn't about, okay, we're going to spend this money to get this. But David Dean was a visionary, and he knew that that's what's going to happen.
So
you have to start spending money.
Yeah, so when Dennis Bergkamp arrived and you were, you know, at a point in your career where, like you say, a couple of years later you were moved to West Ham, but were there still things that you as a player could learn from him at that stage of your career?
Yeah, yeah, his preparation. Because remember, before Dennis came, like I said, we were in the wilderness. Tony was getting over his stuff. Bruce Rioch and George Graham before him placated him in what he was doing with the drinking and everything and all the stuff that was going on. Tuesday Club was still in full flow. You know what I mean? It was just, for me, it was like, it was accepted as a norm to do that. But when Dennis came, and the best thing, the only thing that Bruce Rioch done for me was made me room with Dennis. And I realised how a world-class player prepares himself for not only training, but for a football match and how he lives his life. That's why I tell the story about the pyjamas, and everybody likes it, about the pyjamas. But the thing what I took from it in the end, by the time we finished in that, was it's how you carry yourself and how you see yourself and how everything is immaculate with him and how the preparation was meticulous and literally to fine detail in respect of what time he went to sleep and how he went to sleep and what he'd done in his routine and his pyjamas and his phone, his missus, then went to sleep and then he was ready in the morning, wake up, do his stretches. He made me realise that it's just more than yes, you've got good players around you, but it's how are, what are you doing to enhance yourself so you can be amongst these players? And that's all that happened with me. I wasn't a massive drinker or party animal anyway, Andrew. So it was very easy for me to just slip into that mode what he was in.
Yeah.
You know, professionalism and preparation. And you know what I mean? It was something that I, like I say, it was a blessing to be able to be, you know, to get myself in a position where I was able in the end to play with a player of that caliber, Andrew, because he is, like I say, when I meet him, when people see how I mean, I genuinely love him.
What were the things that you discussed in the interview, without giving away any spoilers or anything like that, yeah, but things that you look back on, obviously, I guess it's a very Arsenal-centric interview, but, yeah, you know, what are the things or the moments that you shared that really stand out?
It was his first, you know, people constantly talked about the first seven games and how he was, people were calling him a flop, and the things about Stuart Pearce and Stuart Pearce saying that we should have bought Stan Collymore and stuff like that. And I asked him about it, and he said, to be honest, he said we were living like in a hotel, him and Henrietta, and they were still getting used to all the English stuff. Of course they could speak English, but they weren't really into the newspapers or anything about the newspapers or hearing the so-called pressure that he was meant to be under. And he said, I was just carrying on like normal, you know what I mean, waiting for my time to come in the game when it would happen. But he said, I was kind of oblivious of the fact that everyone was making this massive deal that I hadn't scored yet. And so I said, Dennis, don't you even remember after the Hartlepool game where they said, the headline was Dennis, and this was the game before Southampton. The Hartlepool headline was said he couldn't even score against a second string goalkeeper from Hartlepool.
Mm.
That was the headline. I remember it. And I remember it was Dennis in a kind of forlorn figure walking after this game. And he said, to be honest, I didn't take much notice of it because I was so focused on just settling in and with my wife and just us getting by in a new country and stuff again, because remember, he's been at Italy. And he said, I just totally was oblivious to it. I didn't take no notice.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we saw what happened. You know, I think the Hartlepool game was before the Southampton at home, and he scored like two unbelievable goals. But we spoke about that. We spoke about, obviously, the Newcastle goal. You know, the great goal. Didn't he mean it? We spoke about that. And I said to him, like, but Dennis, I remember when we scored goals in training, and it was just, it was fine. Because when we watched it, Andrew, that goal, and I remember, I don't know what it was, I can't remember the score at the time, maybe we was losing, I don't know what it was, but he didn't even celebrate it. I said, Dennis, did you realise the kind of goal you scored? He said, no. He said, I've just done what we've done, it was all in the movement, it all happened, and then when I saw it back, I realised, and then everybody was making a big deal of it, and then he said he watched it. But like, it was interesting how he explained how it went and why it, for him, he just celebrated like normal, just ran back, done his bit and just ran back. But he explained it to me, and like I said, I don't want to give spoilers about it, but it's fascinating when you listen to him speak about it. It's just fascinating.
It's just his job. He's just doing his job in a way.
Well, but the thing about it is yeah, and you can see by when anyone watches it, if you watch it, you see he scores the goal, just runs around, just does a quick fist pump, and he's running back to the halfway line. So, you know what I mean? I think we were either losing in the game or it was a serious point of the game.
It was it was early on, actually. I think it was about 10 minutes in, so it was 0-0 at the time. But, you know, away from home, it's a different thing.
Yeah, and so, but like, what I said to him is that you don't even celebrate. Did you realise the calibre of goal you scored? He said, no, not really. It's only when afterwards I realised what it was about. We spoke about the Leicester hat-trick. You know what I mean? We spoke, you know what I mean? You know, it's like, it was just like, when you hear him speak about it, it's because from the outside, the only way I can try and, I don't know, explain it, Andrew, is like when people say about the goals you scored and that, you're doing it because you're in the moment at the time. You don't think of it as anything other than, well, that's what I do. And like, when I said, yeah, but Dennis, this was one of the greatest hat tricks that people have ever seen. And then I said to him about, Dennis, do you remember when you're the only person before and since to have one, two, and three goals in goal of the fucking month? He said, and you know what? I think he kind of went, because that's how he goes. He laughs. He went, oh, yeah. And just laughs. You know, because, like, you know, it's really weird, Andrew, because you know, somebody that you admire so much, but you're really good friends with him, but you admire him so much, and it's almost like you're a little bit shy in their presence. That's what it used to be like with Dennis. He doesn't realize, because he saw me as his friend and that, but I saw him as great just all the time. Great all the time.
Do you? What's your favorite Dennis Bergkamp goal, if you have one? Is there one that, you know, maybe that people don't talk about, or one that you as a player wish you might have scored?
No, the one I liked best, not the first one against Southampton, but the second one, because I think the second one he scored against Southampton was the one where all of a sudden, for whatever reason, whether he realised it or not, the shackles were off. The shoulders weren't as heavy. He didn't have the world on his shoulders, what we all thought he was doing. And when he picked up that ball, and you know, he picked it up from someone on the right-hand side, come inside and then cut back outside and hit this unbelievable shot from outside about 25 yards. And it just blasted in off the post. That was the one, because I remember I was going in, following it in. Not just in case, it's just because I was further forward in front of him. But when it went in, I remember just blasting like the ball. I just remember just thinking, I want to go and celebrate with him. I've got to speed up. I've got to get back up where he was, because he ran back towards the halfway line. That, for me, was the goal I loved more, because it was just like, you know, when you're expecting great things from someone.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I saw the great thing. He scored the first one from Glenn Elder's cross, which was fantastic. But the great thing was that.
Yeah.
You know, that was the great thing. This is the Dennis Bergkamp that I've seen on the television. Seen him score so many great goals for Holland, for Ajax. And then I saw him do a great thing while I'm on the pitch with him. Obviously, the goals at Leicester were amazing. But that was the first one, Andrew. And that was the one that made me think, Jesus Christ, this guy's good.
And he proved it for season after season after season.
Yes.
So you get the sense that if Arsenal were to approach Dennis at some point and say, look, we know you don't want to be a head coach, but we've got an academy here which has a lot of young talent in it, and I want to talk to you, if I can, in a couple of minutes about some of the young talent that's breaking through at the moment, that he would definitely be open to a return to the club on a coaching level?
Well, the thing is, Andrew, I think it's definitely a call that he would take, because I get the impression that the job he was doing at Ajax, he really enjoyed. And working with kids of that age that he can really impress himself upon, with the freedom to play and that spirit in which he played, of expression and stuff like that. I definitely think he would take the call. And, you know, with us, I feel, so I don't want to talk out of turn, but I know that she is somebody that they absolutely adored England when they were here. So, you know, I do feel that it's something, if that was in the mix, then Dennis would definitely take that call. And, you know, I can't even tell you, even just thinking of it maybe happening, if it may happen, gives me a buzz of what just having him back in the fold would mean for the whole club. Just for the whole club, Dennis, how much Dennis would give a lift, Andrew, to the whole place.
Yeah.
If he came back then.
Look, we are seeing a bit of that as well, aren't we, over the last couple of, the last little while. You know, Freddie is back in and he's now part of the first team coaching staff, and Edu is in as technical director. And I think we spoke about this before, didn't we, that, you know, maybe in the last few years there weren't quite enough. I know it's, you know, not necessarily just having a connection to a club is not necessarily the only reason to get a job. You have to be good at the job, but having Arsenal men there and guys who know what Arsenal is supposed to be about is a real, I think it's an important thing.
I think it's integral, because what you want to do is you want to uphold the philosophies and the standards of the club. And that only comes from the people who have been there and have been successful there. People like Dennis, people like Freddie. You want people like that there, because they're the ones that, when these youngsters are coming through and people talk about legends of the club, those are the people they mention. Those are the names. And you want to be able to, as a youngster, you're walking through the corridors and Dennis Bergkamp's walking past. Freddie Ljungberg's walking past, or whoever it's going to be. You know, and so those are the things that make them, it's aspiration, Andrew. It's something that Arsene Wenger, for some reason, he didn't really buy into. Yes, he had Robert Perez there for a little bit. doing stuff in and around. But he didn't really buy into the fact that the legends that have been at that club and what they can give just by being in and around it. And that's why I think, you know, it's something that we may have missed. We may have missed the trick on in that era, in that time, when we had a half-decent team that just needed a bit of guidance. You know, so when you look at the youngsters now, and we've got some brilliant youngsters, you know, yes, if you've got that kind of figure around, and you can see already the impact that Freddie's having, it's going to do something, Andrew. It's going to do something.
Yeah. Speaking of having influence over young players at the club, it's, you know, it was very interesting to read Eddie Nketiah talk about the relationship that he has with you and the advice that you've given him. And I'm curious, you know, to see, you know, how exactly you've been mentoring him or advising him, because obviously he's got coaches, he's got his own coaches around, the coaches at Leeds and all that kind of stuff. So is it sort of more sort of off field? Look, these are the challenges you're going to have.
Yeah, it's one to one. Firstly, we had to let, you know, make him understand that if money's what you're doing it for, then, you know what I mean, you'll probably last 5-10 minutes. But it's about legacy and what you're capable of doing. And do you want to play for a club like this, Arsenal, a great club, and be a success and put your name up there with the goal scorers, myself, Thierry, everybody. Because at the end of the day, you've got the ability and the capabilities to do it, but how much do you want it? So when me and Eddie started doing it, we'd done some stuff with a gaming company, and that's where we first started talking. And that's when I started talking to him about movement and scoring and what scoring should mean. And how you should never be satisfied with one goal, two goals, three goals. What are you willing to do to get the fourth and the fifth? You know, in respect of what you want to do. What do you want to do? Do you want to win things? Do you want to? Is it just for money? Is it just? I don't know what it's for. Is it for the, and it's not with him. He's got an unbelievable family unit around him, and all he needs is guidance. And the thing is, I want to give those guys guidance, because at the end of the day, It's brilliant, Andrew, when you're a successful footballer and you've played at that level and you've come through and it's been hard and he's gone on loan now and he's scoring and he's doing well. And I did say to him, yeah, go to Leeds, because it's a big club and they're under pressure and they need players to play under pressure and react under pressure. And you need to be a goal scorer if you come back to Arsenal, who can score goals in pressure situations. Leeds will give you that kind of experience. And I say to him about his movement. Never get lazy with your movement just because you've scored a few goals. Continuously make that run to the near post, to the far post. Continuously make that run from one for the defender, one for the for someone who's crossing the ball. Never lose that, because you can always score a goal with those movements, because it's basic centre forward play where you can get those goals. You nick 7-8 of those goals a season just by doing the movement. It's a goal we saw Martinelli score the other day. Against Standard Liège. It was a beautiful movement, a great cross from Tierney from the left. But the movement was one for the defender, got in front of him and just flicked it in. That's a centre-forwards goal, Andrew.
Yeah.
And that is what you've got. That is what I say to Eddie. Those are the goals that you've got to try and work on getting. You'll get the ones where you get your one-on-ones, or you might get the ones where you get it on the edge of the box, you move it out your feet, bam, you blast it in. Brilliant. It's those ones where you get in front of the defender, you make the run for the defender outside the box so you can clear the space, so you can blast into the near post. Those runs are what people don't see. And some of the times, the ball doesn't get there, but you cannot stop making those runs. And that is what I say to Eddie on a weekly basis.
How?
On a weekly basis, because at the moment he's talking about he's not playing. I said, remember why you're there. You're there to improve yourself and show those players that you're at a club like Arsenal, great club like Arsenal, with a great attitude, and you're not playing as often as you'd like to play, but you're coming on and you're scoring and you're working hard in training. That is what top players do. So when you do get back to Arsenal, when you're a success, they'll say, yeah, when he was here, he was amazing. His attitude was great. That is how great players become great players.
How highly do you rate his potential? Because he is still quite young. But obviously, you know, the start that he's had at Leeds, like you say, he's not starting a lot of games, but he's making an impact. Yeah. And I think he has 4 goals and he's played a couple of games for the under-23s there and he's scored in those games too. So, you know, it's got off to a very promising start. But, I mean, does he have that, like, natural
yes,
instinct, yes, that can be, yes, honed over time.
Yes, he can, Andrew. And as long as he plays how he plays, because he gets in the box and people say, yeah, he's always scoring tap-ins. I wish that people could score more tap-ins. It's not easy to score tap-ins because you have to be arriving and getting there and make your movements so as you could get in there to get a tap-in. If it was that easy, everybody would be doing it. It's the people with the knack of knowing where to be and being in there to get the tap-ins are the ones that end up scoring the goals. Now, the problem that he may have is that will he have a manager patient enough for him if he's with his link-up play and everything else, what happens as a number nine, if it's not going for him, would Unai Emery have the patience to say, I'm going to stick with him for another few games because I know he will score goals. We're creating chances, so he will score goals. That is the only problem he'll have, is if he's not scoring, if a manager will have the patience with him to get himself back on a scoring run. Because if they do that, what you want as a striker, Andrew, is knowing that, listen, I ain't scored for 3-4 games, but I know this manager will leave me there. It's what happened with Tammy Abraham at Chelsea. For a young player, it's literally out of the blue that you see that. You don't really see it. And Frank stuck with him, and look what he's doing now. He's got 8 goals. That's what Eddie would need. He would just need somebody to have faith in him. If you've got a team that's creating chances, that if he hasn't scored for a few games, would still play him and keep the faith. That's what it comes down to with a young player and a young striker.
Well, look, we'll obviously have to wait and see how he gets on for the rest of the season at Leeds. And, you know, Bielsa's a very interesting coach for him as well, isn't he? You know, to work under. And another player, and you talk about being in the right place at the right time, somebody who has that quality, not as a striker, but as a midfield player, is Joe Willock, who got his 3rd goal of the season against Standard Liège the other night. And, you know, he has this ability to be there when the ball breaks in the box. But, you know, so many other qualities aside from that, the way that he carries the ball through midfield. We've seen Bukayo Saka come through. Reece Nelson is making progress this season. How enthused are you by this crop of young players that's coming through the club? Because we've had, you know, young guys who've come through. Quite a lot of them have been foreign players who've come to the club at an early age and haven't quite got there. But with these guys, with Eddie, Reece Nelson, Joe Willock, Saka, you know, they're local boys as well. And I think that makes it just a little bit more special.
It does, because like you go back to the 80s when all those guys, when Tony and David Rocastle and Michael Thomas and all those guys broke through later, Kevin Campbell and everybody, Paul Davies. It's something that when you can relate to them because they are local boys, you tend to want them to do well even more. And when you look at the crop that you just mentioned, Joe Willock, Reece Nelson, even Maitland-Niles didn't get mentioned there. When you mention those guys and seeing that they've got a genuine opportunity and they're good enough to be in there, and to be fair to the manager, he has thrown them in. He has put them in there. You know what I mean? It really does infuse me simply because I think that if he can stick with them, again, don't bow under the pressure of maybe us losing a few games and then the kids are the ones that are sacrificed because you need to win the games. Joe Willock is somebody that he really is knocking on the door now, Andrew.
Yeah, big
it's
time.
Really difficult. He's very much knocking on the door now. And this is why there's certain players in that are under pressure to perform. And what you want to see from the manager now is, if you're not going to perform, then people are here that's playing good enough and are knocking on the door loud enough that they have to get their chance. That's what we need from the manager now.
All right. Yeah, well, look, it's an exciting group of young players. And, you know, the cup games have been great fun this season, and the Europa League group stages are... you know, they give us a chance to see more and more of these guys. Just very finally, 2 goals in 2 starts at the Emirates for Gabriel Martinelli, and apparently centre forward is not his best position. That's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting, because, again, we look like we've got somebody with the movement, like I mentioned to you, Andrew, that looks like he knows his way around the box. You know, the way he took those 2 goals were fantastic. He was unlucky with the last one. You know, he was in there, just evaded his foot. But we're talking about someone, Andrew, who knows his way around the box. So anybody we can find that can help Laka, help Aubameyang in respects of getting goals, we've got to start making sure that they get their chance, simply because I'm worried about Aubameyang losing any kind of form, and then all of a sudden we start struggling. We need to get goals from somewhere else.
For sure. Well, look, it looks like we've got some players who can add that. Ian, I look forward to watching this interview with Dennis Bergkamp, a real trip down memory lane for all Arsenal fans. And thank you very much indeed for your time. I always really appreciate it.
Love you, Andrew. Thanks very much. Up the Gunners, my friend.
Thank you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
What a man. Thank you very much, Ian Wright. And the interview with Dennis Bergkamp is appearing on Ian's YouTube channel on Wednesday. So make sure you're subscribed to that to get that interview and all the other good stuff that Ian does on YouTube as well. It's ianwright.com/ianwright.com. It's youtube.com/IanWright. youtube.com/IanWright. It's always great to have him on the podcast. I do remember the very first time that I interviewed Ian, I made an absolute bollocks of the intro. If you haven't heard it, I might as well play it for you here. Right, I'm delighted to be welcome. Oh, fuck that shit. Sorry, man.
Brilliant.
All right, I'm delighted to welcome to the Arsecast right now an Arsenal legend, Ian Wright. Hello there. Ever the professional, that's me. Anyway, look, hope you enjoyed that chat with Ian, and do make sure that you check out the interview coming this Wednesday on his YouTube channel. I'm going to leave it there for this one. Remember, there's an Arsecast extra, and also, if you like all this wonderful free content that we give you and you want to support the site and you want to get extra content and extra benefits like ad-free podcasts, ad-free Arseblog apps on iOS and Android, and lots more besides, you can become an Arseblog member on Patreon, patreon.com/arseblog. It costs a fiver a month, and that's it. And you help support everything that we do here on the site. So check it out if you like, patreon.com/arseblog. If you don't like, it's fine. All this stuff will always be free for you anyway. Right, I'll leave it there. It is an interlull. We're heading into more than 2 weeks, or just 2 weeks without Arsenal, because we're not playing until the Monday after the interlull and after the international games finish. So that's going to be a bit of a chore. We will make sure to have a podcast for you on Friday, so you got something to listen to and to break up the tedium of the interlull. Until then, folks, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.